Penguin Random House Audio presents On the Origin of Time, Stephen Hawking's Final Theory by Thomas Hertog. Read for you by Ethan Kelly.
To Natalie. The question of the origin hides the origin of the question. François Jacquemont. Preface. The door to Stephen Hawking's office was olive green, and, though it was right off of the bustling common room, Stephen liked it to be slightly open. I knocked and entered, feeling as though I'd been transported into a timeless world of contemplation. I found Stephen sitting quietly behind his desk, facing the entrance, with his head too heavy to hold straight, leaning against a headrest on his wheelchair. He slowly raised his eyes and greeted me with a welcoming smile, as if he had been expecting me all along. His nurse offered me a seat next to him, and I glanced at the computer on his desk. A screensaver scrolled perpetually across the screen, to boldly go where Star Trek fears to tread. It was mid-June of 1998, and we were deep in the labyrinth of DAMTP, Cambridge's renowned Department of Applied Mathematics and Theoretical Physics. DAMTP was housed in a creaking Victorian building on the old press site on the banks of the River Cam, and for nearly three decades, this had been Stephen's base camp, the nexus of his scientific endeavours. It was here that he, wheelchair-bound and unable to lift even a finger, had passionately strived to bend the cosmos to his will. Stephen's colleague, Neil Turok, had told me the master wanted to see me. It was Turok's animated course, part of DAMTP's famous advanced math degree, that had recently kindled my interest in cosmology. Stephen had got wind, it seemed, that my exam results were excellent and wanted to see if I'd make a good doctoral candidate under his wing. Stephen's dusty old office, stuffed with books and scientific papers, felt cosy to me. It had high ceilings and a large window that, I would later find out, he kept open even on freezing cold winter days. On the wall next to the doorway was a picture of Marilyn Monroe. Below it, a framed and signed photograph of Hawking playing poker with Einstein and Newton on the holodeck of the Enterprise. Two blackboards filled with mathematical symbols occupied the wall to our right. One featured a recent calculation to do with Neil and Stephen's latest theory of the origin of the universe, but the drawings and formulas on the second one appeared to date from the early 1980s. Could they be his last handwritten scrawls? A soft clicking broke the silence. Stephen had started talking. Having lost his natural voice in a tracheotomy following a bout of pneumonia more than a decade before, he now communicated through a disembodied computer voice. This was a slow, laborious process. Mustering the last bit of force in his atrophied muscles, he exerted a feeble pressure on a clicking device, much like a computer mouse, which had been placed carefully in the palm of his right hand. The screen fitted to an arm of his wheelchair lit up, establishing a virtual lifeline between his mind and the outside world. Stephen used a computer program called Equalizer that had a built-in database of words and a speech synthesizer. He appeared to navigate Equalizer's electronic dictionary instinctively, pressing the clicker rhythmically as if it were dancing to his brainwaves. A menu on the screen displayed a number of frequently used words and the letters of the alphabet. The program's database included theoretical physics jargon, and the program anticipated his next word choice, displaying five options in the bottom row of the menu. Unfortunately, word selection was based on an elementary search algorithm, which failed to distinguish between general conversation and theoretical physics, with sometimes hilarious results, from cosmic microwave risotto to extra sex dimensions. Andre Claims appeared on the screen below the menu. I waited, in hushed expectation, fervently hoping that I would understand whatever followed. A minute or two later, Stephen directed the cursor to the icon Speak in the upper left corner of the screen and said in his electronic voice, Andre claims there are infinitely many universes. This is outrageous. There we had it. Stephen's opening shot. Andre was the celebrated American-Russian cosmologist, Andre Linda, one of the founding fathers of the cosmological theory of inflation, proposed in the early 1980s. A refinement of the Big Bang theory, it postulates that the universe began with a brief burst of super-fast expansion inflation. Linda later concocted an extravagant extension of his theory, in which inflation produced not one, but many universes. I used to think of the universe as all there is, but how much is that? In Linda's scheme, what we have been calling the universe would be only a sliver of a vastly larger multiverse. He envisaged the cosmos as an enormous swelling expanse of countless different universes lying far beyond one another's horizons, like islands in an ever-inflating ocean. Cosmologists were in for a wild ride. Stephen, the most adventurous of them all, had taken note. Why worry about other universes? I asked. Stephen's answer was enigmatic. Because the universe we observe appears designed, he said. Then, as he continued clicking, why is the universe the way it is? Why are we here? None of my physics teachers had ever spoken about physics and cosmology in such metaphysical terms. Isn't that a philosophical matter? I tried. Philosophy is dead, Stephen said, eyes twinkling, ready to engage. I wasn't quite ready, but I couldn't help thinking that for someone who had renounced philosophy, Stephen used it liberally and creatively in his work. There was a touch of magic about Stephen. With barely a flicker of motion, he breathed so much life into our conversation. He conveyed a magnetism and charisma that I had rarely seen. His broad smile and expressive face, simultaneously warm and playful, made even his robotic voice sound rich with personality and drew me deeper into the cosmic mysteries he pondered. Like the Oracle of Delphi, he had mastered the art of packing a lot into a few words. The result was a unique way of thinking and talking about physics, and, as I shall describe, a new physics altogether. But that concision also meant that even a minor clicking glitch, such as a single missing word, not, for instance, could, and often did, lead to frustration and confusion. That afternoon, however, I didn't mind being immersed in confusion. And I was thankful that Stephen's browsing of Equalizer gave me time to consider my responses. I knew that when Stephen said that the universe appears designed, he was referring to the extraordinary observation that it emerged from its violent birth spectacularly well configured to sustain life, if billions of years in the future. This convenient fact has, in one way or another, bedeviled thinkers for centuries. Because it feels like a major fix. It's almost as if the genesis of life and the cosmos are entwined with each other, that the cosmos knew all along that one day it would be our home. What are we to make of this mysterious appearance of intent? It is one of the central questions humans ask about the universe, and Stephen felt deeply that cosmological theory had something to say about it. The prospect, or hope, of being able to crack the riddle of cosmic design drove much of his work indeed. This itself was exceptional. Most physicists prefer to steer away from such difficult, seemingly philosophical matters. Or they believe that one day it will turn out that the universe's delicately crafted architecture follows from an elegant mathematical principle at the core of the theory of everything. If this were the case, the universe's apparent design would seem like a lucky accident, a serendipitous consequence of objective and impersonal laws of nature. But neither Stephen nor Andre was your usual physicist. reluctant to bet on the beauty of abstract mathematics.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?